Hello and welcome to the Health Ranger Report here on Brighteon.tv. I'm Mike Adams, the Health Ranger. Today we're continuing with our new audiobook. Well, I'm presenting it here as video. It's called Resilient Prepping. It will be available as a free download at resilientprepping.com at some point, a few weeks out. Today is the third episode, and we're going to be covering everything about resilient prepping here. We're going to get into the structure of societal collapse, and then the collapse timeline is what we're really covering today. Now, if you've missed the previous episodes, you can find them at brighteon.com. Just look for the Brighteon TV channel. And then, of course, you can also go to audiobooks.naturalnews.com if you want to download this audiobook when it's ready, plus the other existing books such as Survival Nutrition. So stay with us. We'll be right back after this short break for the full show. All right, welcome back. I'm Mike Adams here, the Health Ranger, and this is the Health Ranger Report on Brighteon.tv. So yesterday we left off at, we covered the introduction for resilient prepping. We covered some of the structure of societal collapse. But a couple of things just to wrap up that chapter two are that we've all got to remember that we won't have long-standing access to complex devices that require parts. For example, you may have radios. They will last a very long time, but acquiring new radios or parts for radios is going to be very, very difficult. Now, it is good to have a satellite phone. It is good to have a backup two-way radio. It's good to have maybe a GPS device or other electronics, even a backup laptop. Just understand that on computers, you know, hard drives fail. All hard drives fail. All power supplies fail. So unless you have a series of spare parts, you won't be able to rely on using that laptop forever. Just remember, eventually everything collapses back down to, you know, a third world type of country. It's also worth remembering that most of the electronic devices that you might be using today are really spy devices anyway. So in a collapse scenario, you won't be using a cell phone, but then again, they won't be able to spy on you through your cell phone. Excuse me. You won't be using, you know, Alexa devices, but then they won't be spying on you through those Alexa devices as well. So all you've got to do is really make that transition to low-tech devices. And in a low-tech environment, you actually gain liberty and freedom because it's this high-tech, hyper-connected Internet of Things type of environment that is making us all, you know, slaves to the techno-grid. And then also just want to mention that in a lot of the scenarios that may unfold, you will not have access to fossil fuels. So all the fuels that we use, gasoline, diesel, propane, natural gas, and so on, will likely become unavailable relatively quickly. Some of those fuels can be stockpiled. We'll talk about that in a future chapter. You know, diesel is probably the best, or kerosene. But eventually you won't be able to get any more in the collapse scenarios that we're talking about. So we've got to transition then to wood fuels or other types of fuels such as solar energy, for example, or candles, you know, simple basic things that are very reliable, that don't require refineries to be functioning. Okay, so that's a wrap-up of Chapter 2. Now we're going to get into Chapter 3, which looks at the collapse timeline, and here we're going to try to lay out some kind of rough predictions of how the timing of all this might happen. Now, right now we're in the pre-collapse time, and in the pre-collapse we're already seeing some of the following things. We're seeing supply lines collapsing, the food supply lines. We're seeing power grid failures. We're seeing lockdowns eliminating the labor pool. And this is having a very devastating effect on the continuity of many businesses affecting food supply lines. We're seeing logistics breaking down, transportation of ships and trains, planes and trucks. It's all breaking down right now. We're seeing increased violence and lawlessness. We're seeing sharp increases in crime, especially in cities across North America. And then we're also seeing psychologically a lot of people becoming very fearful and some insanity, some people panicking, some people becoming paralyzed, and so on. So there are psychological shifts that are already taking place. There are supply lines that are breaking down. We're also seeing inflation, so very sharp inflation. The dollar is losing about 50% of its purchasing power this year alone. And that puts us in the category of hyperinflation, by the way. So we're already in hyperinflation. So if you didn't know it, if you're wondering kind of what the early days of a total collapse of society would look like, just look around. You're watching it. And anytime you go into a bank, let's say, or you want to open a bank account, or you want to send a wire or something, have you noticed that nothing works anymore? Have you noticed that if you call the IRS, you try to solve a tax problem? Nobody's got any clue. There are no answers. The hospitals have become, you know, murder centers now at this point, murder factories. The rule of law has completely collapsed. The police don't respond most of the time because they've been, you know, defunded in a lot of these cities. And things are just breaking down. We've even seen the internet go down with just someone misconfiguring a border router at GoDaddy or Cloudflare or places like that. One typo in a configuration file is causing like a third of the internet to shut down. So we're already in the pre-collapse days right now. Now, the collapse is going to intensify over the next several months. So this is looking forward, you know, sometime over the next probably 6 to 12 months, we're going to see a real intensification of the collapse. Actually, I think it's going to happen this calendar year, but it's not going to be all at once. There's not going to be just one day that everything breaks. It's going to continue to be this rapid devolving of the function of society. So you're going to see, with each passing day, you're going to see more and more banking problems until one day there will be a banking freeze where you can't make deposits, you can't make withdrawals, you can't transfer money. You're going to see more and more power grid failures, and not just from, you know, hurricanes and so on, but power grid going down or being turned off on purpose, as we've seen in California, because they just don't have the power to supply all the demand that's out there. So they shut it down and then they blame the wind or something like that. You're also going to see then with power failures, especially in the wintertime in the north, you're going to see a lot of problems with pipes freezing, you know, homes freezing, people freezing. In the summertime in the south, you're going to see a lot of people dying from heat exhaustion because of a lack of air conditioning and so on. So just recognize, when you see these things, these are signs that the collapse is intensifying. When you go to the grocery store and you see that shelves are empty, or you know somebody who's just lost it, they've lost their mind, they're going crazy now. These are signs of the intensification of the collapse. Now, we got to remember that there are going to be millions of people who are damaged by the spike protein, probably tens of millions damaged in some way, and not all of them are going to die. There are going to be people who have extreme cardiovascular damage, extreme neurological damage. You are going to continue to see a degradation of cognition across society, where people's brains don't work because their brains are being eaten from the inside by the spike protein bioweapon. So what's going to happen with a lot of these people is they will lose short-term memory. They'll lose cognitive capabilities. They'll lose the ability to do a job, for example. They will lose the ability to reason, which of course makes them want to go back and get more booster shots. They will lose sometimes sensory acuity. Their brain will start to become dull to the world, so they may lose a sense of hearing. They may have nerve problems with their eyesight. They may lose even sensitivity to the sense of touch or olfactory senses. You know, a lot of people have lost their sense of smell because of the spike protein. So all across society, more and more, you're going to recognize that you're living among, I mean, you might call them zombies, but that's perhaps not a very polite term. It's more like brain-damaged people who are damaged by the spike protein. And not all of them took the vaccine, by the way, so we can't automatically assign blame to people in that condition. We have to help them when we can. A lot of them will have taken the vaccine, but some of them will have simply been exposed to spike protein shedding by being near other people who themselves have been vaccinated. So just watch for that. There's going to be a lot of signs. Oh, also, you're going to see more traffic accidents, erratic behavior on the roads, more violent crime from irrational people who are becoming desperate, but they've lost the sense of reason. So they tell themselves that they want to just go out and rob a bank or rob a grocery store or what have you. So those are some of the signs to watch for. Now, let's get into the actual timeline of how this may unfold. Once the banking system freezes, that starts the clock. Because with banking taken down, then you have, within about 72 hours, you're going to have mass looting and chaos in the major cities. Because with banking going down, you'll not only lose the ability for companies to offer payroll or for people to even deposit checks, you know, pension checks and Social Security checks and so on. You'll also lose the food stamp program, and those recipients of food stamps will go pretty crazy very quickly. So when the banks go down, if it is system-wide, and it'll probably be announced as a bank holiday, a restructuring, you know, they'll tell people don't panic, we're just protecting your savings, right? I mean, they're just stealing everything. This is the final looting. But within 72 hours, you'll have mass panic, looting, lawlessness, violence. You're going to have people who did not prepare taking part in the mass looting of retail stores, grocery stores, and also sporting goods supply stores, trying to get firearms, ammunition, shoes, clothing, you know, camping food, anything they can get. So there's going to be a lot of damage that happens to the retail establishments. So even if the banking system were to come back on, a lot of these stores would be permanently down because they've suffered so much damage, or even there's been arson, for example, or the doors have been damaged, or they've been completely looted, the cash registers have been broken, and so on. So it's hard to know when any of those could really come back online, even if things got back to normal. But here's the bigger problem. In a banking freeze, very quickly you have a grid down scenario, because without transactional capabilities, even the power generation companies can't purchase the coal that they need, or the raw materials, or the transportation, or even the spare parts that they need. They can't even meet payroll. So even if you're getting, let's say, hydroelectric dams generating electricity essentially for free, well, you have to have people running the dams. And those people have to show up at work. How do you pay them if the transaction system is down? So what happens is, very quickly after a banking collapse, then it cascades into a power grid collapse. And of course, you'll have martial law declared very quickly. And you'll have governors using the State Guard and National Guard troops to try to just force delivery of coal, for example, to the power plants, or force the continued operations of hydroelectric dams. But they may have some success, but it'll be spotty at best. And one of the reasons is because the National Guard and the State Guard troops have themselves been vaccinated. So they're going to suffer the cognitive damage, you know, all the brain damage that's taking away their ability to function in a rational way as well. So these vaccines are not only directly killing people, but they're taking away the ability, the functional operations ability of the people who might be dispatched in an emergency to try to keep the infrastructure running. So things can actually collapse very quickly. Those who need medication or medicines, you know, on a daily basis, once they run out of their meds, they will not be able to get new meds. And many people will die under those circumstances. And I know a lot of people are dependent on insulin as well. So in terms of the big calendar here, in the first 6 months, if this is a sustained bank transaction freeze and a power grid down scenario, within the first 6 months, you could have a 50% fatality rate of the population. And within the first year, you could have up to 90% of the country could be dead. I'm not predicting that that's going to happen, because I think that many states and regions will restore power. I think Texas, for example, will launch its own currency. So it'll be, you know, Texas dollars or whatever. And you'll be able to restore a system of trade at a local level, even if a lot of the blue states collapse into total chaos. So I'm not predicting a 90% death rate across the country. However, I do think that there could be a 90% death rate in certain blue cities with the economic collapse, the violence, the total mayhem, and also with Democrats trying to run the place and they destroy everything they touch. So you could see, you know, cities like San Francisco or even Los Angeles could absolutely, under certain circumstances, they could achieve a 90% death rate. But even having a 50% death rate is quite plausible. As this happens, let's see, you're going to have a lack of water also in areas like Los Angeles. And much of the west of the United States requires, of course, pumps to bring water to everybody. I mean, the city of Los Angeles, they have to pump water over a mountain to get it into the city. And those pumps are fed by electricity. And the electricity is fed by, well, partially natural gas operations that generate the electricity. But it's a complex thing. You have to have all the workers have to show up. All the parts have to work. You know, the power plant has to work. The power grid has to work. The pumps have to work. A lot of things have to go right in order to get water to the city of Los Angeles. So there are many points of vulnerability or possible breakdown there. In addition, you're going to have sewage treatment systems in many of these cities will be offline. So that's a very nasty situation where eventually you have the sewage lines just back up. And because everybody's still flushing, at least those who are still alive, if they can get water, they're still flushing, but that water is just getting backlogged at the sewage treatment center. And you're going to end up with sewage all in the streets of a lot of these cities. I mean, even more than there is now in San Francisco. And then you're going to have disease outbreaks from sewage and everything that goes along with that. And of course, the cities will smell even worse than they smell right now. You know, downtown San Francisco kind of smells like a urine-infested bathroom right now. Or New York City, for that matter. But they're going to get way worse when the sewage backs up. So you won't want to be living anywhere near those cities. Now, as all of this is happening, there's going to be a reaction, a response from locals who wish to survive. They and some local law enforcement that are part of the survival response to this, they will begin to cast aside the anti-police rhetoric, and they're going to cast aside all the wokeism, and they're going to start shooting looters on sight. There's going to be a very harsh response to lawlessness at some point. Because, you know, at some point, you can't just let the looters just keep overrunning your city and pillaging, you know, all the businesses and raping and murdering everybody. At some point, you know, you have to fight back. And that's going to happen pretty quickly. And you're going to start to see some real strong pushback by armed Americans against the lawlessness. And many of those armed Americans are going to work with local law enforcement, whoever's not corrupt. So probably a lot of local sheriffs, for example, sheriff's deputies, will be working with citizens to create security forces to stop the looters, stop the lawlessness, stop the arson, and so on. So these are going to be locally formed groups that will simply assert authority. So you're going to have a lot of sheriffs deputizing certain citizens or citizens groups, especially veterans or former law enforcement that may be living in local areas, and they've got an AR-15 or they've got, you know, whatever, long-range hunting rifle, and they can help out. They're going to be recruited very quickly. So you're going to see a lot of pushback, but there will be mass lawlessness in most of the areas, the high-density areas, as these collapse scenarios unfold. It's important to understand that a lot of the infrastructure, you know, we're talking about timelines, and you might ask, well, when will some of this infrastructure come back online? And the answer for a lot of the power grid is really never, because beyond a certain point of failure, you can't bring them back online very easily. Do you remember the big freeze that happened in Texas earlier this year? And in testimony, the Texas power grid operators said that they were only seconds or minutes away from a catastrophic failure that would have kept the power grid, the entire grid for the state of Texas, would have stayed down for many months. And that's because with certain aberrations in voltage or very high demand by certain areas without sufficient electrical supply, some equipment explodes, catches on fire, suffers catastrophic failure. And this can happen not just with transformers, but you know, a lot of different electrical components that function in substations and electrical distribution systems. Those parts mostly are made in China, and they're very difficult to replace in a timely manner. And if you have systemic failures across the power grid happening in multiple cities at about the same time, plus we're really dealing with a world war where China is waging war against the United States, why would China ship the parts needed to replace the broken, failed components of the power grid and get America's power grid back online? Why would they do that when they're achieving their desired purpose, which is to kill off the American people so that China can rush in and then occupy America and eventually take over all of North America and all of the world with Chinese communism? So we should not expect replacement parts from China. We should not expect power grids to come back if they have sustained outages, that is, longer than a few weeks. Hydroelectric dams, for example, may suffer turbine damage to their key turbines if it's not properly monitored. If the dam isn't, you know, really, you have to baby the dam based on the water flow. You have to adapt to lots of conditions, electrical demand, electrical supply, even the air temperature and air pressure. All of these things affect functioning of hydroelectric dams. They're very complex operations. You can't just walk away from them without suffering catastrophic damage. So the same thing is true with nuclear power plants. If you can't maintain the cooling pumps, obviously, then if the fuel rods are still in place and you don't have the buffers that block the fuel rods and block a supercriticality event, then you go into a meltdown, which is what happened in Fukushima. So you've got to have an organized shutdown of the nuclear power plants. If you don't have an organized shutdown, it can be a catastrophic failure that results in the release of radioactivity. You can have a meltdown. So then in terms of the timeline, the most dangerous time in all of this is going to be the first 30 days, because that's when the completely unprepared, lawless masses are going to still be able to function, even though they're on the verge of starving to death. They're going to still function, and they will come after you and try to get supplies and get guns and ammo and food and everything. After the first 30 days, people who are not well prepared are going to not be as functional. And then within 60 to 90 days, mass starvation will kick in. So you're going to see a lot fewer people. But you may see well-organized groups of raiders who are having success in groups. You know, individuals won't have much success in this scenario, but groups, especially larger groups, 25, 50, 75 people, will be able to successfully take down corporate offices or grocery stores or ranches or, you know, farmers and so on, and they will be able to continue to sustain themselves by capturing fuel and food and other things so they can stay active, which, you know, brings us to the importance of an organized defense against those kinds of groups if they are, in fact, raiding and stealing supplies and looting. But other organized groups might be pro-rule of law, and you may want to, in fact, help them and work with them to reestablish barter and trade and transportation and the rule of law in your society. So that wraps up about Chapter 3. Just remember, this is going to be a full audiobook. It will be available at resilientprepping.com. That's it for the show today. We'll continue tomorrow with Chapter 4, Understanding Money and Finance During the Collapse. Thank you for watching. I'm Mike Adams. This is Brighteon.tv.